to tell you a little bit about a American art critic who anyone who does a degree in art history will come across, a guy called Clement Greenberg. And he wrote this essay called Modernist Painting. And what he said was that in order for painting to be valued as an art form, it needed to rid itself of the, you know, basically pandering to other art forms. So it said it needed to get rid of any references to theatre, to literature. It needed to be able to stand on its own as an art form. Do you think that computer games need to do that?
It's a difficult one because it's a visual medium that has narrative, so there's always going to be parallels to film and television. Mm. And I think essentially that kind of helped. It was it allowed people to feel, oh, this is kind of familiar, actually. And then when they started making games more akin to films with a more cinematographic.
Cinematic.
So, cinematic. Oh, no. I write words. I don't tell. I don't talk them, so as you can tell. that'd be good. Yeah. For instance, like, you know, we start with Tomb Raider, which, you know, it's like a film, and I love Tomb Raider because it was...
Because you like big boobs.
Big triangular boobs. Yeah. You know, those are the best kind of boobs, obviously. but it was one of the first games that was really like a film, presented like a film with at least sort of semi-realistic character models. Mm-hmm. But I think that video games don't need to piggyback off the back of movies anymore. There's no point.
Because I think when the technology was there, when it first developed, I think there was a trend for games to almost push towards that. I mean,
it's a corporate thing.
Yeah,
it's getting more customers, generating more capital, which allows for more game development, which can be a bit of a trap though.
Because I think one that springs to mind on that is the very first Resident Evil game.
With the worst acting ever.
The worst acting ever. But what that game did was it experimented with things like camera angles.
Yes.
Yeah?
Hmm.
It had the very cinematic use of sound. Yeah? Sound built up tension. Like, tension was built up in very cinematic ways, very obvious cinematic ways. But and it was successful as a game, but that idea's been dropped because I think it was quite disorientating. Like, is it Resident Evil 4 onwards? It's basically just a third person
over the shoulder affair. Yeah.
And it doesn't kind of mess around with those.
And it's ultimately made, well, Resident Evil 4, one of the greatest games of all time, for all sorts of reasons. And it was a big sort of thing for them to come away from that, because after Resident Evil 3, which still maintained that same style as 1 and 2, they experimented with a couple of different types. They had like Resident Evil Dead Aim, which was your light gun game, and then they tried the old online element, and that sort of failed miserably. But then
didn't even know about that.
No, there's a reason you didn't know about it. And then Resident Evil 4 came out, and it was a new direction for the games. Yeah. Instead of creating a sort of fear and lack of control by giving you awkward, clunky controls, they created it, you know, contextually through situations and sort of, instead of like it being a real ball ache to run away from two zombies, they made it a horrendous affair to try and get around like seven zombies that could move at a higher rate and were a bit smarter. And they did that well in the situation by creating a sort of a new mythology that joined on to the Resident Evil mythology, you know, by using, like, parasite-infected humans that had more mobility. And the horror is still there, but it's just done in a way that improved it all.
I think this is the thing I've got, is, like, as games, they are very good, very well-structured, amazing games, the Resident Evil games.
Yes.
But as stories, as films, as narratives.
Oh, they're hammy as hell.
They're horrible.
They're just like. But the thing is, they believe in themselves, and that's where games can really sort of excel. Because when you play a game,
all right, Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
There's a point where you find a document that says in big letters, "Our plan."
Yes. Yes, it's like...
Exposition!
Yeah, it's like, this is the reason, this is the explanation for the story, just...
But it's that, like I say, games believe in themselves. It's like, that's why films in the 80s worked. That's why Arnold Schwarzenegger's films are brilliant, even though they're as hammy as hell.
Yeah.
Because they believe in themselves, they're not... Well, some games are, but...
But they're not great films. They're good. And this is the thing, though, like, there's obviously something. I think my point is, right, is that they're not great films, and we know that they're not great films. We wouldn't consider them that, but we can still consider Resident Evil 4 as a great game. Mm. We can still consider Resident Evil 1 as a great game.
Yes.
And it's almost like in spite of its cinematic elements and...
There's elements you have to consider. There's the state of the games industry at the time, so everything else that's coming out around it. Mm. If it's a new game... I mean, like, in films, it's not very often you'll get a new... style of film. A lot of films now, genres and such, are set in stone.
Yeah. Or and just hacks or, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But with games, even now, there are still so many possibilities for new experiences. And when Resident Evil 1 came out, it was the first of its kind. Granted, Resident Evil 4 was not the first third-person action-adventure game, but it was the first third-person action-adventure Resident Evil game.
Mm.
And it's all about, I think games, a lot of it, I'm being very general by saying this, it's all about context, and that context is affected by so many other elements, the games industry, what else is going on, the movies that have influenced it, because, you know, there are so many moments in Resident Evil 4 where I go, oh, that's like this film, or this situation I've seen in another game, and, you know, games are these things that are sort of oblivious to everything else around them, but also sometimes very referential of modern pop culture, and it's such a strange blending of so many different elements. And
just say it's postmodern, then you're all good.
I don't want to say that. I don't want to. No.
You're all good. That's your get out of jail free card. It's postmodern.
It's postmodern. Yes, you wouldn't get it. But I mean, then you'll get a game like Shadow of the Colossus, which, if nobody's ever played it, I would highly recommend it. You can get it on the PS3 now, along with another game called Ico.
Ico, oh my
God. My God, those games, they will break your heart. And
majestic.
Yeah, they're just, right, yeah. But
I didn't enjoy Shadow of the Colossus as much as Ico.
I had to stop playing Ico for a long period of time because I could not bear to lose that girl. I would hold on to her for dear life, and I just could not.
Was it the Eris effect?
Oh, definitely. But more so, even more amplified.
I think we should explain. I mean, it's. Yeah, the Eris.
Yeah, well, Eris.
It's a moment in game history, which anyone who knows what it is. Very simple, but it's
the death of a character, but
a main character in
a video game. It was one of the first times where.
Unheard of.
Yeah, unheard of. A character that
dies gets an extra life and then comes back.
Exactly.
This character dies,
and she dies in a dramatic way in a sacrifice, and it's sort of unseen at first until later on you kind of think it's pointless, and also one of the things about that is that when you get her at the very start of the game, and
Final Fantasy VII.
Final Fantasy VII. Buy the game, find it, enjoy it. You can level her up like the rest of the characters. You can find abilities for her.
I even did the thing of playing the game through once, realising she got killed, and then made the mistake of thinking, right, I'm going to just get her up as high as I can so she doesn't get killed.
And she does.
And it's that thing again, going back to what we were talking about earlier, these, you're doing events just to link to those little narrative cutscenes.
But if it's done right, Final Fantasy VII is one of those. Again, it was a first, wasn't it? Mm. And so, the first time it happens, coming to it with new eyes,
it was groundbreaking.
It was. And the graphics were clunky, and they, you know, you got your like in-game moving around little chibi sort of characters as they moved around
with round hands
and polygon heads, and then you get combat where they're still sort of polygon but they look more human, and then you get used to the FMVs, which at the time were just like, oh my god, just like, you
the
know
what?
The FMVs, full motion video, you know, these pre-rendered cutscenes for your enjoyment that were the sort of the moments of like huge action that the game could not bring across through its regular gameplay engine. And, you know, that's where it worked well, because it couldn't. Nowadays they can, so that's where they get a bit lazy.
I think there was a scene in Final Fantasy. I mean, this again goes back to the, just, you know, the, it did do a lot to kind of go against these expectations of what happens in a game. And there was one particular battle. I think it was. I might be getting confused with 9 here, but I think there was a battle in Final Fantasy 7, and you're fighting a kind of mid-level boss kind of thing, and you basically have to die in that battle for the game to progress.
Yes, but it's not. It is not in your thinking.
Yeah.
You get. Yeah, you die and then you get rescued afterwards. Yeah. No, it's not. It is 7. It's the Midgar Zolom.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
So that was groundbreaking as well.
Yeah.
Because it just.
I bet, wasn't it satisfying when you, later on you went back and you fucked it up?
But it was, yeah. I mean, it was like you were desperate to survive. Well, you couldn't.
Yeah.
And once you when you play it through the second time and you realise,
you just don't do anything and let it kill you.
It's like the amount of Phoenix Downs and stuff are wasted just to kind of revive my characters and things.
Yeah, and you can just imagine the games developers laughing at you and yes,
you spent all this money on these items.
Dance, my pretty.
Yeah. It's really weird because I like games that do that, that because you go into a game with expectations of what a game should be and what a game world is, and I like those games that really question and challenge that. I mean, I was showing you the game Braid. And tell me, I mean, you played, like, what, 3 levels of that game?
Yes.
What's your initial views on that game?
It's the best things, best often games, books, whatever, are the simplest ideas, really, the simplest notions, just done perfectly, because we can be high-minded if we like, and we can be postmodern or think of all these interesting ideas, metaphysics in games, massive stories, massive plots. But
Brett Brady is very metaphysical.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, no, yeah. Granted, it is, but in the simplest form of metaphysics. But it just it's the idea that, like, you've got 2 commands: jump and rewind time, and through those 2 permutations, they create something that is just mind-bending. Just it's a joy to look at, anyway. Considering it's an Xbox Live Arcade game, it's a really nice game to just enjoy aesthetically, so that your eyes just don't give up. You know what I mean? It's not a drudge in that way.
I mean, I like the music as well.
Yeah, the music
soundtrack's really calming, almost folkish.
Yes, and then obviously when you're rewinding time as well, and you get to hear it backwards, and there are moments when you're, instead of just rewinding time in one chunk, you're sort of hammering on that button to make something happen, so the musical cue is also there going, yes, you're mucking about with time, and the sound is telling you that too. But the puzzles themselves are just, I mean, play the game, play Braid, get it. It's on Xbox Live Arcade. I highly recommend it. But it will boggle you, but in such a satisfying way, because it's as if it's asking your brain to think in a way that it has not done before, and that is a satisfying thing about games, because a book can be challenging, a film can be challenging, but not in a way that a game is. Like I say, these books and films and whatnot don't deny content to you if you cannot think in the way it wants you to. And then when you do think in that way, the sense of satisfaction is so great that it spurs you on to get this next hit, this next endorphin rush for thinking, Jesus, I'm so fucking clever.
It's like that first... There's the lineage, the levels almost of the game... just go against what you'd normally go. What world do you start on? Well, you start on world 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you, like, first thing you did when you started was go, well, what? I don't get where I start, where's world 1? And so, just go to that door.
Yeah.
And then you walk through the first level, and you... Because the basic aim of the game is to construct jigsaw puzzles, and you get these pieces, and you have to collect them, and you have to solve puzzles in order to collect them. But you go to the end of the first level, and by the end of the first level, there's actually no real way of solving that puzzle without going on to the next level. Which isn't, you know, like,
the
expectation in a game is, right, each level is almost independent, and you solve that puzzle within that, so you can move on to the next level. With this one, you could go through all the levels of the game without solving any of the puzzles, and you'd, you know, you'd get to the end of the game, but you wouldn't have
completed it.
Yeah. What you have to do with this is you go to the next level, you get some pieces that then fit into the first puzzle, and then you go to the puzzle, and then you realise, and it took me ages to realise this, is that the puzzle isn't just a puzzle that you've got to solve. It actually, it's like a frame within the level, and you mess with the puzzle, and when you put the puzzle together, most of the parts of the puzzle, it has a little shelf on the puzzle, and that shelf, you basically move the jigsaw puzzle out of the frame, and it allows you to get the other two pieces of the puzzle, and it's just such a little simple thing, but would, you know, I mean,
it's a simple twist on internal logic that your brain doesn't naturally go towards, and thus when you do figure it out, it's kind of like it's opening new ways of thinking to you, even if it's just within a video game. You know what I mean?
But it's like right, because it almost bashes down a lot of like, right, okay, the logic of this game isn't within the immediacy of, you know, the scene that I'm in. Whereas most games are, right, this is a level, this is a puzzle, deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, this is like, right, this is a level, this is a puzzle, there might be a bit more of the puzzle over there, you might have to do this and this, and it's...
But then isn't that the sort of the beauty of games? The idea that a game creates a world, and a world is full of physics with its own causal logic.
Yeah.
And that is a great opportunity. But
it's also a great aesthetic experience as well.
Just the idea of that it's that... Oh, it's hard to describe. It's like an abstract experience of, like, I've created this thing which is like a picture, but then that picture interacts with the world. It's a very difficult thing to describe, and you know, when you play
need to play it.
Yeah.
Play it.
Yeah, when you play it, you get it. But going back to Shadow of the Colossus, the point I was going to try and make was that if you break it down to its simplest form, there are 16 monsters and you have to kill them. That's the game. That's it, right? There's no great plot arc. There's no cast of characters. But it is done in such a way that, I mean, you start off with really no exposition at all. The main character comes to this old temple in this sort of forbidden valley.
I like it when you realise you're on the monster.
Yes. Oh, it's just awesome. I mean, essentially, the idea of the game is it's about what would you do to fulfill a moral obligation, something you've put on yourself. But it never tells you this. It doesn't explicitly explain that what's what the game is about, but as you travel around this sort of enclosed valley, it's sort of like an animal habitat for these creatures that range from the size of like a Range Rover to the size of a skyscraper. And you have to take them down, you have to kill them, because, you know, I won't tell you why, because you should go and play the game. But you have to do it. There is a real emotional investment of your character in doing it. And it's the simplest kind of investment, a very human story, but you go and do this to you know, as a means to enter your goal, but it's a very, you know, as you play the game and you travel around with no one else to interact with, all you're left here with is a reflection on the situation of what you're doing.
You know what, I think we might be onto something here. What makes a successful game is games that don't explain.
Well,
right,
yeah.
In terms of storyline, right?
Yeah.
Resident Evil. By the end of Resident Evil, you know exactly why everything's happened in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
If they'd left it how it was.
Yeah.
Like, Left 4 Dead. Have you played Left 4 Dead?
Yeah.
Right? Why are the zombies there?
Yeah, you never find out. You never...
Why is the world so fucked up?
Right? That's the beauty of it, isn't it? Yeah.
Fallout, okay, the world's so fucked up because of a nuclear war, but why is it so fucked up? Why is everything like it is? Nothing gets really explained. And that's why it's successful, for me.
Yeah.
Right? Resident Evil explains stuff too blatantly, too obviously. It leaves nothing to...
But Resident Evil does it well, though. It's you start off with
I'll
nothing.
Raise another point, okay. Right? Remember what I said earlier about the document in Resident Evil 4 that says our plan?
Yes.
Right. Metal Gear Solid, right? the explanations in that are so vague and...
Oh, no, well, not always, depending on... I mean, some of them are ludicrously complicated. I mean, Resident Evil 4 is 60% cutscene, which is all exposition.
No, not played that one.
Yes.
But well, I'm on about, like, 1 and 2.
Okay, yeah.
Okay, there's hints, there's... You know, they reference things that you cannot possibly have an idea about what they are.
Yes, I see what you mean, yeah.
Right, so there's no explanation...
Hmm.
Well, there is explanation.
You just have to believe in it, don't you?
Yeah, but
it's asking you to take that leap.
It's not this thing of spelling everything out. And I think maybe that could be... I mean, it's that might be an element.
It depends on whether it's consistent with the style of the game.
Yeah.
It works in Left 4 Dead because in a apocalyptic situation, the whole idea is uncertainty, is fear.
Yeah.
And if everything is explained to you, it kind of takes away an element of that.
Yeah.
But if you're in a situation where all you know what you have to do is get from A to B and survive, Left 4 Dead essentially is a simple game.
But then surely when you're playing Left 4 Dead, you're cooperating with people. You almost invent your own narratives. That's your own story.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. That's, I mean, like we were saying about Skyrim.
Mm.
Like we were saying, like, again, going back to Shadow of the Colossus, I had to put that together. It was what how the game made me feel.
That didn't explain much either.
Yeah, exactly. Rez gave you a mild explanation, but it was a simple premise anyways that you are a program going into a computer to eradicate viruses. That was it. And that was it. That's the story.
Yeah.
It was the visual manner in which it engaged you with this techno third-person shooter, burn your retinas sort of like, and
I mean, let's maybe talk about that game a bit. I mean, it's a bit of a weird one because it is, and again, this is another reason why games are so it's just a purely immersive experience. There's no
well, it's the idea of immersion itself is the biggest part of games. What takes you in? Like some games delight in reminding you that you're playing a game.
Mm.
And that's the sort of the geeky sort of like, play the game, you know what I mean? And you're getting the references. And then some games are completely about forgetting that you're playing a game and just about the experience.